Well, it's hopefully somewhere around 7:34 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert. I am not in KPFA studios in Berkeley. I'm in New York covering the United Nations Climate Action Summit and the events surrounding it, including the historic climate strike on Friday, in which some 4 million people around the world coordinated an act of protest in favor of a livable planet on the scale of which the world has never seen. Now, I want to play you a piece of tape that came from the very beginning of yesterday's high-level talks at the United Nations. You have probably heard it before. It has been in rotation nonstop on pretty much every broadcast media outlet. This is the opening remarks by Greta Thunberg. She is the Swedish teenager who started the climate strike movement as a strike of one in front of the Swedish parliament just a little bit over 1 year ago. And you've probably heard this clip cut in such a way that it emphasizes the raw emotion in her voice, the sense of betrayal she directs at the grown-ups. To give you a sense of what these talks are like, I wanted to play you what happens just before she takes the stage. Listen to the tone of the question that's being used to set her up.
Greta, your first climate strike was a lonely event a little over a year ago. And in the intervening time, you have sparked the interest of millions, literally, of children around the globe, demanding action for climate change. What's your message to world leaders today?
She's being held up like a set piece for these climate talks.
My message is that we'll be watching you.
Not like someone who has done more to move the needle on public willingness to take action than anyone else in the room.
This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words, and yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering, people are dying, entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight? You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. But no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe. The popular idea of cutting our emissions in half in 10 years only gives us a 50% chance of staying below 1.5 degrees and the risk of setting off irreversible chain reactions beyond human control. 50% may be acceptable to you, but those numbers do not include tipping points, most feedback loops, additional warming hidden by toxic air pollution, or the aspects of equity and climate justice. They also rely on my generation sucking hundreds of billions of tons of your CO2 out of the air with technologies that barely exist. So a 50% risk is simply not acceptable to us, we who have to live with the consequences.
Now, the point of these talks, is to get the world's nations to use their regulatory powers to cut the amount of greenhouse gases that they are releasing and to try to keep the planet from heating up past the point at which human civilization and many, many ecosystems basically collapse. The problem is the state of international climate law is such that nobody at the UN has the power to compel any country to do anything. These talks are basically a giant exercise in collecting pledges from the world's nations, tallying them up, and making sure the accounting for how much has been pledged and how close that will get the world to its overall goal is pretty accurate. So the kind of stagecraft of the talks is to start them out by doing everything you possibly can to shame the nations present who have already not made an aggressive enough commitment, and that is basically every nation, at least every nation of any size, into doing better. If you understand it in that context, you understand why they start with a speaker like Greta Thunberg. Then you also understand why the very first country to take the dais and explain its position is not the world's largest polluter, China, not the world's largest historic contributor to greenhouse gases, the United States, not anyone anywhere near the top of the list, but rather the head of state for New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern.
We are strengthening our emissions trading scheme to more effectively price climate pollution. We aim to plant 1 billion trees by 2028. We have stopped issuing any new permits for offshore oil and gas exploration. In their place, we're investing in green hydrogen, biofuels, and the goal of 100% renewable electricity generation by 2023. We're making electric and cleaner cars more affordable. We're investing heavily in rail, trains, buses, walking and cycling infrastructure. We've established a $100 million green investment fund to help shift private investment towards the zero carbon economy of the future. And we've created a $300 million fund aimed at supporting climate mitigation and adaptation in the Pacific. And we've done all of that in just 2 years.
The next type of country you put at the dais when you are trying to shame the rest of the world into action, one of the most vulnerable. The Pacific Ocean is populated with small nations that are collections of islands that constitute a coral atoll. They're islands that form because coral grew around the rim of a volcano whose tip was just at or just below the surface of the ocean. Take the Marshall Islands, the highest point in this entire country of more than 50,000 people, is just over 30 feet high. And it faces the prospect of being one of the very first countries to be completely depopulated by climate change, and then, in short order, to be wiped off the map altogether. Here's their president, Hilda Heine.
As president of a low-lying coral atoll nation, I stand before you as a representative of the most climate-vulnerable people on Earth. We are also one of the most ambitious countries when it comes to the global fight against the climate crisis. Mr. Secretary General, in the spirit of the Paris Agreement and in line with your call to every country, we have already submitted a second and more ambitious nationally determined contribution, as well as a decarbonization strategy to reach net zero emissions by 2050. Other countries must now follow our lead.
So this speech is kind of like a 1-2 punch. First off, they're saying, if we can do it, you can do it. If we, a poor island nation in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, a nation that still contains the radioactive debris from 67 nuclear weapon tests that the United States conducted over our islands, if we can get to zero climate warming emissions, then the rest of you better get in line too. The second thing the speech is doing is saying, look, the stakes are higher for us. We are the people you are putting not just out of a home, but out of a homeland when you fail to act.
For atolls, there can be none of what some people are calling a managed retreat. We simply do not have such a luxury. Our front line is our last line. Our front line is our last line. There is no fallback. If the line falls, that is it for us. The right to remain is a basic right of the Marshallese people to remain in their ancestral land.
Next up, kind of an odd choice. This is a country that is one of the world's top emitters of greenhouse gases, like in the top five. Not the biggest, but the one that has been consistently seeing its pollution increase the fastest. This is India, whose head of state is Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
In India, we are going to increase the share of non-fossil fuel in our fuel mix and increase by 2022 our renewable energy capacity to 175 gigawatts. And we are committed to further increasing this to 450 gigawatts.
Now, he's up there because he's one of the few countries that's actually making a promise to do something concrete. It doesn't mean that their pollution is going to be going down, though. This is kind of wild because almost every country in the world has given up on building new capacity for coal power. India's plunging ahead. Then there is one more type of entity that is at the United Nations making pledges. They are not allowed at the official dais of the climate summit. They are only allowed in the press briefing conference room. And that is the subnational entities. Probably the biggest one on this front.
California is the tentpole of America's climate policy.
This, of course, is California Governor Gavin Newsom.
We're asserting ourselves on 100% renewable energy goals. 5 million is our goal for electric vehicles in the state of California. We already have 43.
All of which is great, and all of which, according to many climate campaigners, is not enough, particularly given the fact that California has quite a lot of oil coming out of its own ground.
Your stated commitment to deal responsibly with the climate crisis seems a little bit difficult to reconcile with drilling data, which indicates that there's a 20% increase in oil drilling in California this year compared to 2018. How is your state dealing with the extractive sector and also the fact that it's got 15 refineries and it's by far the largest refiner of oil in Western North America?
As you know well, we were the third largest producer of oil, now sixth, and we are moving to transition not just our vehicle fleet from a demand perspective, but on a supply perspective. You may have noted in our budget the first time we've ever submitted investment to look to organize in a very deliberative and pragmatic way that transition, not only as it relates to oil and gas, but different strategies to make sure the workforce is protected.
Now, there's an interesting backstory on this. There's an agency in California that's basically in charge of handing out drilling and extraction permits. It's called the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources. Everybody calls it DOGGR. And this is an entity that environmental groups have charged for years. It's just kind of like hopelessly captured by industry interests. And less than a year into Governor Gavin Newsom's first term, the Palm Springs Desert Sun does an analysis of how many drilling and extraction permits are going out the door. And the number, if you break it apart, is actually worse than what came up in that question. The number of permits that were going out the door for unconventional extraction techniques, this would be like fracking, these had gone up by 60% over the same period the year before. Same set of reporters also found 8 high-ranked people at the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources who had what looked like conflicts of interest with the industry that they were issuing the permits to. And since then, Newsom has intervened, heads have ruled at the agency, and basically there are no more new permits going out the door, but the state has never said we're in a moratorium. And this has been a sore spot for activists who would like a little bit more certainty than the state of affairs over the past few months and the words coming out of the mouth of Gavin Newsom. So I tried to get some clarity from him after the press conference. I'm curious, you referenced the pause on new fracking permits in California. What climate groups have been calling for is an outright ban on any new oil and gas extraction. How far are you from
that? Done without authorization. Legally cannot be done, executively. So it requires authorization from the legislature, and we'll see what they do with that this year or in the new legislative year. But in the absence of that, we wanted to jumpstart that conversation with a kind of deliberative approach that we haven't in the past. It's been an ideological, intellectual approach, but not a very pragmatic one. And the purpose of putting money in the budget and setting aside a real study to really, forgive the language, drill down on what it means and what it doesn't, that is underway. And that is something that will help guide us to this low-carbon green growth future.
You've got a bill sitting on your desk, AB 342, that would crack down on pipelines, moving fossil fuels from public land.
Take a look. I got over 700 bills and not covering any of them right now. But we've been signing a lot, including smog checks for heavy vehicles, which the first in the nation to do that, which I signed on Friday. 50 more bills I signed on Friday, but I ate it through 700 more. So that's among them.
What's the point of letting people take oil and gas out of the ground that the planet can't afford for us to burn?
Well, that's a separate question from the bill, obviously. Yeah, appreciate it.
All right, we got to get going.
I wasn't entirely sure about this claim that Newsom doesn't have the statutory authority to just stop issuing permits. For one thing, it sounds like a cop-out because if you are a Democratic governor in California, where there are massive Democratic majorities in both chambers of the state legislature, it is not that hard for you to change laws you don't like. So if it's something the governor cared about, you would have expected him to say something about it during the legislative session that just wrapped up. So I decided to check this with one of the campaigners who has been working on this.
Jean Hsu, and I am the energy director and staff attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity.
Okay, so Gavin Newsom just came out to the climate summit, talked up California's actions. You've been protesting, asking him to basically put a moratorium on taking oil and gas out of the ground in California. I asked him about that. He said it's a question of whether or not we have the authority to do it. And he pointed to the fact that they haven't been handing out many permits lately.
So the answer to that is very simple. Governor Newsom absolutely has the executive authority to do that. The Public Resources Code basically allows DOGGR, which is the agency that grants permits, to manage...
It's the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources.
Yes, absolutely. They actually have the discretion under statute to manage all oil and gas activities to protect the health, safety, and life of the environment. So that is within their public mandate that they have to act in the public interest. And Governor Newsom absolutely has the ability to direct that agency to act in the public interest and stop all existing and new oil drilling.
So since it came out this summer through reporting by the Palm Springs Desert Sun that permits for enhanced extraction techniques were up 60% over the prior year. And since it came up that agency, Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, had several people in high-level positions with potential conflicts of interest, there's been like an informal moratorium on new permits. And he was talking this up inside his press conference saying, you know, our numbers are down in the past few months without saying there's a moratorium. He's also been cleaning house at the agency. I mean, do you think California is making progress?
We absolutely think that California is making progress, but there's a question to ask. Why do this in such an indirect way? You absolutely have the executive authority to do it, so do it. And the whole point of that is that right now, when we're looking at the climate emergency, we have no real leaders in the world right now who sit on large oil and gas deposits who are actively taking the stance to keep those fossil fuels in the ground. And if Governor Newsom does want to be as his predecessor called himself, a climate hero or a real climate leader, that actually means stepping up to the plate and being bold and being and absolutely put a legal moratorium on oil drilling in California.
Why don't you explain the bigger picture argument for targeting fossil fuels where they come out of the ground rather than where they get burnt? California has strict commitments on how much it's going to send out tailpipes and smokestacks in the state. Why does it matter where it's drilling?
The climate crisis is a global problem. You need to stop where it is coming out from. Absolutely, governments everywhere need to control and regulate how oil and gas is being used, but it actually is also the responsibility, and you cannot shirk your responsibility for producing that oil and gas in the first place. So because this is a climate crisis, it is all hands on deck, and every single government needs to do both. They need to regulate from the tailpipes and how you expend oil and gas, but you absolutely need to go to the source of the problem first and keep those fossil fuels in the ground to begin with. It is shirking complete responsibility to allow California to say, we are regulating according to the Clean Air Act, but we are pumping out oil that is going to be burned and polluting communities around the world. That simply is hypocritical and does not resolve our climate emergency.
Someone from the California oil industry might say, great, people are still going to be driving in California, so if it's not coming from Kern County, it might be coming from the Alberta tar sands, which would be even worse for the climate. Like, why target the oil that the state can actually regulate?
So we've actually published a report that says that the oil coming out of California is dirtier than the Alberta tar sands. So that in and of itself is a completely false accusation that they're making. So that's a false allegation. But taking a step back, we know generally that we have to completely transition our entire energy system to a renewable energy system. Part of that is getting cars to become 100% electricity powered. And as part of that, you cannot be still digging up oil from the ground and obstructing that absolutely necessary electrification of our transportation.
I would imagine that there are some environmental advocates who've been working their butts off to get people in charge of states to take aggressive climate commitments who are cringing to hear you laying into Gavin Newsom, governor of a state that's gone further than pretty much anyone else in the United States. I guess there's a strategy question there. Why go after the people who are already doing work?
In comparison to Europe, California is actually not at the forefront of where it can be. We are targeting Governor Newsom because he has shown again and again that he can be a leader on very progressive issues. And the most important progressive issue right now for the climate emergency is to stop extracting fossil fuels. If we can get Governor Newsom, who claims to be a leader and we believe that he can be, if he can actually be a first mover in the developed world to stop fossil fuel extraction, he will be a beacon and able to ignite that type of responsibility that we are seeking for all of our leaders. This is a total not race to the bottom. We want a race to the top, and we are asking Governor Newsom to become that bold of a leader. And what we're talking about is essentially stopping the capture of our government by fossil fuel companies. We see at the UN year after year that oil and gas corporations are financing the climate talks around the world. Very similarly, in California, they have been very influential on our politicians. So this is the exact moment where we need someone like Gavin Newsom to break through all of that noise and very clearly say, climate emergency equals stopping fossil fuel extraction, and I am going to step up and actually do that. And when he does that, we will rally behind him 400% because that is the exact type of leadership that the globe is missing. And he is in an incredible position to make that type of leap, which, by the way, Governor Jerry Brown was failed to do.
Why rely on the discretion of a governor who's term limited? Why not go the legislative route?
We totally support a legislative route, so I think you can do both at the same time. Our legislators, again and again, have been obstructing this type of legislation, so we have been trying every year. So if those two can work in parallel together, fantastic. But it's very clear that the executive agency can actually do this by itself, so we are pushing it hard on that front as well. The point right now is that the United States has no leader. President Trump is going the opposite way. And right now we are looking for Governor Newsom to step out and absolutely be the type of leader that the thousands of people around the world, the hundreds of thousands of people around the world have been asking for. So we invite him to just step into that position, step up, and really claim that number one position as a climate leader.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, that's Jean Hsu. She is energy director and an attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity, which has been campaigning for a full-on end to oil and gas extraction in California. And that does it for me. It is coming up on 8 o'clock in the morning, probably. I'm pre-recording this. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert, not in KPFA studios in Berkeley, but in New York at the United Nations. Over to you, Kat.